All right, Milo. So we're going to do another wheel spin. But the catch with this is we're going to do our wheel spin procedure like we do.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's plus Christmas.
Oh, it's that time of year again.
Yeah. Blech. Or we should. Yeah. Christmas, man. Go buy stuff. Yeah.
Black Friday.
I don't even really get my son anything because he pretty much has what he everything he wants all the time anyway. Only child, man.
That's
so I usually just do like I maybe get him tickets to an event we're going to go to in the future because it's all about the time you spend together, not about the shit you buy that you don't need.
Yeah. Get him those tickets to see Def Leppard next time they're touring.
Yeah. Def Leppard or, you know, Poison is still touring.
Oh, Poison. There you go. I'm sure you appreciate
they're
that.
Doing like a stadium tour with a bunch of other bands and Joan Jett.
Bunch of 80s rockers.
Yeah, right. And the Scorpions are still doing their thing. Next year, they're doing a big thing at the Hard Rock Cafe, the Hard Rock Theater there in Las Vegas. They're doing show. The Scorpions are doing shows there. So maybe we'll go to Vegas and like listen to the Scorpions. That sounds like a better Christmas.
Yeah. Take him to Vegas. Watch the Scorpions. Take a visit to the Chicken Ranch. Turn him into a man.
It's time to become a man, dude. Yeah. Oh, that's bad. All right. So I have the years up. So here we go. We're going to spin it. Oh, we got 1991.
Yeah. I'm done with that. All right.
We already did a podcast episode about the whole year. Remember?
Yeah, we did actually.
Mm-hmm. So this is very interesting year. All right. Now we're going to choose the topic. Are you ready?
Yep.
Memoir.
Okay.
Okay. And then we're going to pick the segment now. Retrospective. Well, that makes it easy because basically we just got to like come up with some unique memories about the holiday season of 1991.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I can do that. Yeah.
The wheels made it easy for us. It could have said like a bunch of other things, but the wheels were good to us today.
Okay. 1991 Christmas retrospective.
And we'll figure it out and we'll see everybody in the future. Here we go.
We already introduced this because this was a wheel spin.
Yeah. We're in the future now. And what did we decide to do, Milo?
In the theme of Christmas from 1991, it seemed only logical that we should discuss Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, because it was released in December of 1991. It was like a Christmas treat for us.
It was. And I don't even remember 1991 Christmas because I don't remember most of my Christmases because they were all the same, right? You get your endorphins going because your parents are manipulating your endorphins to kind of flow in an anticipation of a reward, like a big rat, and you're about to get your cheese, and then you wake up and all the presents are there, and then you rip them open, you just release it, you're like, oh yeah, oh Christmas, and then that's it, and it's the same every year. So I don't remember any Christmas except 1986 Christmas because I got an Etch-a-Sketch animator. And I was thinking maybe I would have remembered it because the Super Nintendo came out in 1991. And I'm like, well, did we get it on? No. And I think we probably got it sooner though, because my mom was a huge Nintendo file. Like she was infamous in the neighborhood. Like all the kids would come to her. She's like this wise sage lady of Mario. She knew all the secrets and she knew all the codes. She was worse than any of the kids in the hood, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we got it before Christmas because my mom was like, yeah, we're getting that. So I don't remember 19. Do you remember 1991 Christmas? You got up, you opened presents.
That's the thing about Christmas because, yeah, exactly. It's always about like, you know, buying presents, giving presents, 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 presents. But then if you think about it, you're like, what present did I get? What present did I give? I don't remember. So what's the fucking point of Christmas?
I don't know. Like my son's a little different. I mean, he has a credit card. He can get whatever he wants anytime. He's pretty responsible, though. He's pretty good. But it's more like I might get him tickets to something and we'll like go see that in a later date or something like that. More of an experiential thing. It's like when we went to London for his birthday and it was like, wow, London, like it's not some piece of junk that he's never going to remember. He's going to remember going to London for his birthday. That's what we do nowadays. I think that's what separates maybe us from what when I grew up with Christmas was all this plastic junk under a tree. He's like, man, I guess that a few things that I want to guess, but it's more like, hey, I got tickets to the cool thing that's coming up and I'm going to go with my dad or my friends or something. And it's more, that's better that way, I think.
That's the way we are around here. Because those experiences are much more fun than just some stuff that's going to end up in a closet somewhere or broken or lost or who knows, you know?
Yeah, well, going back to that, that's why we chose Star Trek VI, is because I remember in December 1991.
Experience.
That was an experience because I went with none other than our friend Timothy. He's a good guy. I talk a lot of smack, but he's a good guy. He's the wealthy kid in town, but he's a good kid, right?
Did he pay for your ticket?
No, I got my own ticket.
He's like, Jamie, I want to go see this movie. And you were like, no. I don't have any money.
I might have been poor, but I was proud. And I got my own damn ticket. Thank you very much. But we did. We went to go see Star Trek VI. I think it was opening day. It released in early December 1991, right?
Yep.
And I remember it because I was a huge Trekkie. And the scene is like with the exciting music and the credits, and it's in space, and then the credits end, and then it's like, boom, this big explosion. You're like, what is going to happen? Turns out that explosion was kind of the first kind of explosion of its kind, that whole ring explosion thing, that effect. It's called the Praxis effect. And it was used later in Star Wars when George Lucas did his revamp.
Oh yeah, when he had the Death Star blow up, he changed it
to the Praxis effect, and they used it in Stargate when the whole thing it became popular to use that kind of ringed explosion after Star Trek VI, and that's the first time they use it, and it's called the Praxis effect. So you imagine you're like 10 years old, you're watching this thing with your pal, all of a sudden you're building up with the credits and the exciting music, and then boom, this awesome ringed explosion happens, and you're like, oh, something's going to happen in this movie. So I remember that. I don't remember jack shit about Christmas, but I remember Star Trek VI, and that's why we're going to do a retrospective on it. Hey, Milo, you know I'm an old sailor, right?
Yep.
That means I like laughing, drinking, cussing, and sarcasm. But I'm also a sophisticated fellow who loves culture, learning, and funny ladies with charming Southern accents. Do you know where I can get all of these things?
From the Pop-In Culture Podcast.
How did you know?
Because I love listening to our friends Mary Jane and Kiki snark it up and address various interesting topics. They both amuse me and inform me.
Did you know the Pop-In Culture Podcast ranked number 6 on Good Pods Indie Performing Arts Chart?
That's cool. Our audience can catch Pop-In Culture on Good Pods and anywhere they listen to podcasts.
They can and they should. Do it!
It had good special effects too. Because some Star Treks are hit and miss with the special effects, but this one had some good special effects in it as well. And, you know, it wasn't too heavy on them like some sci-fi is, because it went story-wise. And this had a good story around it too. Like, do we become friends with our mortal enemies or not? Yeah. Like, how do we, you know, the Klingons have been our enemies since we encountered them for the first time. And because of their mistake, we can just let them die off. And then it's problem solved.
Yeah. It was an allegory for the Cold War, the end of the Cold War at the time. Mm-hmm. Because 1991 was kind of the official end of the Cold War. And so this movie was like the Praxis moon blowing up because they don't have good safety measures. That was Chernobyl. And then their economy broke down just like the Soviets did, and their empire started crumbling. And it's like, do we become friends or do we crush them? Right. It's a very 1991 movie. It's like, it's a product of its time for sure.
But it stands the test of time as well. Like, I rewatched it in preparation for this and I still enjoyed it. It has flaws, you know, and it's like, that doesn't really work. Or even then I didn't really much care for that, but it is still really good. And it has like a good character arc for Captain Kirk as well, too, of going from like, you know, let him die, I don't care, you know, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, because Kirk hates Klingons.
Exactly. And so to have him come around towards the end and go against what he personally believes for the greater good is really a fantastic aspect of that character, because we've seen him in the series. We've seen him in all the movies. We know him. And they still were able to actually say, well, this is in his character. Let's give him, you know, a chance to be the better person. And he does, because he's Captain Kirk. Of course, he's going to choose the right thing and do the right thing. That's why we love him.
Yeah. And I like Spock's arc too, because he's kind of a Sherlock Holmes character, because it's a murder mystery, really. Who killed Gorkon?
Yep.
Like, what's going on? It's a mystery, right? It's kind of a mystery movie. Gorkon, by the way, Nicholas Meyer, who's the only one who should direct Star Trek movies, in my opinion, who also directed Star Trek 2, by the way, named
Hence
Gorkon.
The two best Star Trek movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Gorkon was a combination of Gorbachev and Abraham Lincoln. There was the two, the Gorkon was, he used Gorbachev and Lincoln as a model for the Gorkon character and named him Gorkon because of Gorbachev and Lincoln. Did you know that?
Did not know that. That's cool.
I know some stupid shit, dude. but yeah, Spock's got to find, like, hey, computer says we launched one, but all the torpedoes are there. Someone beamed on and assassinated Gorkon, but I don't think it was us. It's a mystery movie, which makes it fun because I like good mysteries, right? And again, when you're seeing this for the first time, there's not so many spoilers back then. You don't know what's going on either. You're following Spock around, like, what's going on? And then they have the reveal at the end and all this stuff. I just dug it. I really like that movie. And that's why this is my only memory of December 1991. Christmas, I don't know. But this movie is awesome. I loved it.
I do remember, and I still have the same effect now, is when it's kind of annoying. So they have the bit where they're in the kitchen and they fire the phaser and all the alarm goes off and people come running that a phaser was fired. Right. And it's like, and that's why they didn't destroy the boots with the laser or with the phaser. Right. And it's like, this is the only time that's ever been a thing. Every episode of the series that's had a phaser fired during the ship, like any of the movies, any of the above. And now in this one movie, they have this thing where, like, when a phaser's fired aboard the ship, suddenly an alarm goes off. Yeah, that's a neat feature.
I watched Next Generation for 7 years and they were firing Ferengis and come and fire phasers on the Enterprise. And they're like, what's going on? We don't know. They got rid of that technology right after that movie. Maybe it was a privacy issue or something.
Yeah.
It was plot convenience.
Too many phasers being fired and people come running. And I like how it's like all the main cast too, you know, like James Doohan and like all the main, it's not like, you know, a bunch of security officers come running, but they did eventually, but still it's like the main cast comes running.
Yeah, Scotty comes in. Is someone firing a phaser?
Fire a phaser here.
Scotty, don't you have work to do? You got your passport, old fat guy, dude.
I ran, Mr. Scotty ran all the way up here from engineering.
Yeah, he got there quick.
Fired a phaser.
He got there really quick. He got there before the young security guys did, man.
Yeah, Scotty's exactly. Fast. Exactly. Somebody fire a phaser up here. I just came
and
running.
I like how they're cooking, like they have pots and pans.
Oh yeah.
Maybe they didn't have replicators at that time, I don't know. Everybody's cooking with pots and pans and stuff. I'm like, I thought we were past that.
Pretty old school.
Yeah, maybe Kirk just like old school fresh cook stuff, and that's how he rolls on his ship.
Yeah.
Christopher Plummer played the main antagonist, General Chang, and I thought he did a good job.
Oh, he's brilliant. I mean, he's probably one of the best, honestly.
Well, and it's a very Shakespearean kind of movie, and he has to recite Shakespeare a lot, and he's a Shakespearean actor. I think Star Trek is Shakespearean in general.
It can
but
be.
It's great because he's reciting all this Shakespeare, and he's like a Shakespearean actor, and it's like, oh, Christopher Plummer just laid out, baby. Do it.
And you know he's a bad guy because he's bald.
Yeah. Well, do you know why he's bald? He was originally supposed to have hair, but when they did the makeup, he was like, hey, I actually like this bald look. And they're like, well, okay, Christopher Plummer, whatever you want, man.
They're like, you're Christopher Plummer. Actually, okay. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Well, and he had less makeup too for a Klingon. He just had a little bit. He didn't have the heavy.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as pronounced as.
No, it was very, like, because he didn't want the heavy makeup. And I'm like, okay, Christopher Plummer, like, you're the man, dude. We'll do whatever you want. Just recite Shakespeare. Okay. Yeah, they did good though with the bald thing, because he does look better, I think, with the bald thing going on.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, maybe different parts of Klingon, you've got more pronounced head things. Some parts Klingon, they're a little less pronounced. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Kind of like blonde people and brunettes or whatever.
Exactly.
On Earth, I can see that. Klingons are just as diverse as anybody else, man. They're diverse too. Klingon lives matter. So. Another thing that I kind of liked when I watched it back in 1991, Christian Slater was still big
I know he was big. It was back when he was cool, and he's like, I want to be in Star Trek.
Well, so he was a Star Trek fan, and do you know why he could easily get into that movie? Is because his mother was the casting director.
Oh, really?
Mary Jo Slater. Oh. His mom was the casting director. Oh, so it was really easy for him to just slide on in because, hey, my mom's the casting director. So
I just figured it was because he's like, hey, I'm Christian Slater. I'm super famous right now. And like, can I just, you know, have a couple walk-on lines and be like, yeah, sure, Christian Slater,
well,
no problem.
Well, that's how it was. But it wasn't, like I'm saying, it wasn't hard to do because his mom was the casting director. And he got paid for it. He got paid like $700.
Yeah, which is rate for a walk-on.
Yeah, which is like that would be twice as much now. It'd be more like $1,400 in today's, but that's pretty nice. Walk on,
yeah,
and totally. Make $1,400, $700 at the time. I would be cool with that, but I'm also not Christian Slater in 1991.
True,
but here's something else about that. He was wearing Captain Kirk's trousers from Star Trek II.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he can say he was in Captain Kirk's pants. You know that? Yeah. It's true, dude.
Hopefully they were cleaned at some point.
I hope so. Or maybe he wanted them dirty.
He's like, no, I want them crusty. Yeah, and it was cool that they made a Sulu a captain and stuff. So they're actually showing that characters are advancing. Mm. And it allowed George Takei and William Shatner not to have to actually be on stage at the same time.
Those guys didn't get along at all. Yeah, well known. It's like, that's an infamous like rivalry right there. I saw an interview with Kirk, and he was talking to George Takei, and he was like, hey, George, aren't you like sad you're a captain because you're not going to get as much screen time? And George is like, but I'm a captain. I don't care. I just want to be a captain. How about that?
He probably would have got about the same amount of screen time, honestly, if he were
probably
because it's not like Walter Koenig got all that much screen time, you know.
No, and a lot of them never did. I remember the movie prior to this one, Scotty knocked his head accidentally on a like a top of a door and was out the whole movie. So
true.
You never know what you're going to get if you're not the big three characters. So you might as well just be a captain, right?
And really, DeForest Kelly wasn't even in this one all that much. Truthfully, it was really Shatner and, well, I should say that. No, because DeForest did go on the planet with.
They went to the Kirk planet.
And, yeah.
The asteroid Rurapente.
Yeah. So when they were down
so there. So they were hanging out there. And they met that shapeshifter. Mm-hmm. And they used 1991. They were using that morphing, computer generated morphing thing a lot. They used it in
Terminator
2. They used it in that Michael Jackson video, Black or White, where all the people were like morphing into different people. That was a big deal back then in 1991, that computer generated morphing.
Yeah, technology. It was new, cool technology.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Iman played that shapeshifter, which she's not difficult to look at all. So that was cool.
Yeah, really? You're like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. And did you know that all that Rurapente asteroid, it looks super cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
It looked cold as shit. But do you know it was filmed in LA?
Oh, in a soundstage?
Yeah, or something somewhere in LA.
Hmm.
I think it was outside, but they filmed it in LA. Even though they look cold, Shatner and Kelly were actually both really hot and they had to like constantly wipe down because they were sweating and stuff because it was in LA.
Well, it makes sense with all that clothing and then they're filming in LA.
Yeah, you'd think, oh man, at least they have all that clothing and jackets and stuff, but they hate it because it was like really hot because it was in LA. Yeah.
Bummer. The way you suffer as an actor for your character.
Yeah, you got to bring it to life. But yeah, I thought this is my favorite Star Trek movie. Wrath of Khan is like very close second to me. But they're both Nicholas Meyers. Like I think he should be in charge of Star Trek. And I think he wasn't he originally doing something with this Discovery.
Was he Star Trek Discovery?
Yeah, but then so, they booted him out. They originally had like a bunch of like big names from Star Trek who were involved with Discovery, but they canned them all and got this Kurzweil guy.
And then they're like, oh, it's just make it suck.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I'm with you, although I would say this is my second favorite one after The Wrath of Khan. Mm. Same thing, close second. And, you know, they're both fucking brilliant films.
So I think that's why we decided we wanted to talk more about Star Trek VI than Christmas of 1990. Christmas, because our wheel said memoir, 1991 memoir, right? Retrospective mm-hmm. memoir. What do you, and then we have tacked Christmas on it. And like, what do you remember about Christmas? We're both like, we don't remember jack shit about Christmas.
I only remember one thing about Christmas in 1991, going to the movies.
Yeah, but we remember 1991 Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. And that's rad. I love this movie. And we love movies. And this is one of the big movies for me in 1991. And I went with Timothy. I don't think there was a movie theater in where I was. We had to actually go to another place, and we had our popcorn and we watched it. And I remember just anytime a Star Trek movie came out, I remember it because I was a huge Trekkie. And this one was like the last and the best from the original crew. So that's my Christmas memory is Star Trek, because I'm a geek and I was a geek. I even wore my Star Trek outfit with a little communicator and everything. That's how much. Yeah. I was that kid.
I dressed just normally. Yeah. Oh. I do remember though, thinking when this movie came out that I was like, this is going to suck. Cause it was before he really realized the odd, even number bullshit and stuff like that. It was like, cause Star Trek, the previous one was so bad, and it was like, oh, they should have just ended it. At Star Trek 3 or whatever, Star Trek 4. And then you got to Star Trek 5 and it was just like, that was terrible. And I'm like, they've just gone past their prime and they shouldn't do anymore, And so I went in this thinking, oh, this is going to suck because the last one was so bad, and pleasantly surprised when it did.
Yeah. I'm glad that they did so that they could
end on a high note.
On a high note, because Star Trek 5 was rough.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably the worst one, Star Trek V.
Yeah, well, worst one of the original movies.
Of the original series, yeah.
I look at it now and I forgive it a little more, I think. But it's still bad. And I'm glad that they didn't end it on a bad note like they did the TNG movies.
Yeah, true. Because that was it. Like, yeah, TNG, they're like, oh, well, this last one sucks. So rather than try to make a good one, we'll just be like, yeah, we can't make good films anymore. Let's just reboot the series and make other crappy films.
Yeah. So it's a bummer that my favorite show in the world, and they had movies that weren't terrific, and the worst one was their last one, and that's it. That's how we're going to do it. But this one, I think the crew and everybody who worked on the original Star Trek and everybody who worked on the movies for the original crew, They really got a good send off, and that's just comforting, mm-hmm. It's just comforting in a way, like, hey, cool. You guys got a good send off. And now that things are over, they're over, but it's okay because I feel like your movie was awesome.
And that's how I felt with TNG. It was a great final movie too. Just because it wrapped up almost like the entire Star Trek storyline in a way of becoming friends with your enemies, acknowledging that, you're going to different places in your lives. Spock's going off to do his thing. They're all kind of at that point of retirement in the series. And they just kind of had this nice little final wrapping it all up thing that was really fantastically done.
Yeah. Well, and it also sets the stage for things that you had question about, like in the Next Generation, because you had Worf on the bridge and you were friends with the Klingons. But this is, that was in 87 when TNG came out. So you're like, why are we friends with Klingons? Like,
now you know.
When did that happen? That doesn't make any sense. Klingons are bad guys. They even look like bad guys. What's going on with them? But then you see, like, a couple years later, it came out with 1991, they come out with Star Trek VI. You're like, oh, that's how that whole thing started to go down. And then instead of Klingons being bad guys, you can get to know their culture. They're not just like barbarians who drink and cause trouble. They're that, but they're also, they have this warrior code, a very samurai style code of honor and duty, and they have kind of a whole culture you can explore, right? And that's cool because when you make friends with the bad guy who you think is a bad guy, then you can get to know them, and then maybe you start to like them and appreciate them more. And so in that way, Star Trek could progress too. And they could have an ally to fight really bad guys like the Borg, who have no redeeming qualities.
Yeah, it was really a great, valuable lesson that the world at large should learn from Star Trek.
Yeah, I always thought the world should could learn from. I mean,
and that was part of what Gene Roddenberry wanted too. Like he had this vision of the future, and that it was like we progress for the better. And Star Trek, the original series, all of it was teaching us that and like saying, hey, this is really what we could be if we try to be our best selves.
I think that's what's missing from like modern day rated R Trek is now it's all just, hey, let's try to shock the audience. We're so different and edgy, and it's so easy to murder people because we're angry and we're vaping and all that kind of stuff. Like they're completely missing the point now. But back then we still had that kind of Roddenberry style. You have action, adventure, and conflict, but it we're always trying to be the best humans we can be, not the worst, like current modern day Star Trek. Oh, let's show the worst of humanity, smoke and vape and murder and gore and all this stuff.
With special effects, look what we can do with computers now. With all this, you know, lens flare and angled cameras and action and constant camera movement and quick cuts. And yeah, forget story. We don't care about story anymore.
Oh. And how can we shock you? And how can we play into your millennial sensibilities and angst with by having characters who vape and say dude a lot?
Dude.
Yeah. Oh. Nah, it's trash nowadays. But if you're a younger listener and you haven't seen Star Trek VI, you should go watch it.
Yeah,
you really should. And because you'll still like it. It's not like, oh, some old guys with their old stuff, because you'll like it. And it's got cool special effects, which hold up today, in my opinion.
Do. I agree. They totally hold up.
Yeah. It's not like watching the old 60s show where you're like, hey, yeah, that. I mean, you're watching it for the story and stuff and the nostalgia, but it doesn't really hold up in a lot of ways. But Star Trek VI holds up in a lot of ways. Like it could be released today and still be considered like a good big budget movie, I think. But maybe I'm wrong because I'm out of touch.
It could be, but it probably wouldn't be. There's not enough action in it.
Yeah, too much story.
Too much story.
So the plot may be too sophisticated. Too much dialogue. Spock's trying to solve a mystery. He's using logic.
Gosh, we don't care about that? Mysteries.
That guy sounds smart. I don't like smart people.
Yeah. So, audience, our Christmas present to you this year, this December, is go back and watch Star Trek VI from December of 1991.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Damn right, Merry Christmas. And with that, we will say goodbye. And we are out of here like Praxis, exploding due to overmining and a lack of safety protocols.
We should probably say happy holidays, though.
I said Merry Christmas.
I know, but you're supposed to say happy holidays because, like, they're Hanukkah and Ramadan and, like, whatever else people do nowadays. So you say Merry Christmas.
I'm being exclusive.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I mean, we celebrate Christmas. I mean, we're not even particularly religious. We're just like cultural Christmas. Isn't that the thing now? Isn't that why like Starbucks does the red cup with the happy holidays, but they don't really talk about Christmas much?
I thought we went through a phase where like you couldn't talk about Christmas, but then it went back and you can say,
oh,
so like we went through a phase.
Maybe where you there?
Say, yeah, exactly. So we did go through a phase where you can't say Merry Christmas anymore, but then it kind of flipped over and now you can say Merry Christmas again.
Oh, rad. Okay.
And it can still be inclusive of, you know, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, happy, I don't know, whatever. I don't know what all of them are.
Well, we like all of.
Yeah. But it's like implied that whatever your holiday celebration is, mm-hmm. happy to that.
Yeah. And happy birthday to everybody. If it's your birthday, when you're listening to this.
And, which kind of sucks everybody. If your birthday is around Christmas each year, because you get those combined presents, you know, like this is your Christmas present.
And my brother's birthday is December 24th.
Oh, that's the worst. Yeah. Here's your combined present.
Yeah, it's like Christmas Eve and happy birthday. And yeah, you'll get your presents tomorrow, bro. Poor little bastard.
That sucks. Be like, I want to change my birthday. I don't want to be
birthday. Mine's March 7th. Like,
see,
months after Christmas, boring ass day. Nothing happened on March 7th, you know? He got December 24th. He hated it, dude.
Poor guy. Poor guy.